It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station. You can call in not only those that 800 number, but our local numbers too, 247-728-2353-4674. And Wes Collins is in with us this morning. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning, Ben.
I was thinking of you guys the other day. Rush had a call from Florida. It was somebody who was talking about an estate issue, and it was their wife had passed away. They had transferred. He's in his 70s. Okay. He had transferred property off to some heirs, you know, before he passed. And now Medicaid coming back to look for some of that property or some of those assets. And I thought, you know, this is the scenario we've talked about a dozen times.
Right. Well, you know, that kind of sounds like a situation where everything seemed like it was fine until the wife passed away. And then, here comes the lien third-party recovery, which every state has.
Let's get into that by where we, you know, the idea was the planning far enough ahead of time to make that work out okay.
That's right. That's right. Ben, there's lots of provisions in our laws here in North Carolina and the federal statutes dealing with Medicaid. And we're talking about long-term care, nursing home, skilled nursing home level of Medicaid, here and the eligibility requirements for that. We've talked about that over the past couple of weeks. I was out in court last week, but I understand we're up to the point where we're going to talk about, you know, how this actually works, the rubber hit the road,
right,
how
exactly.
The rubber hits the road and dealing with those kind of issues. But let's just kind of take a scenario here, typical situation, and talk about the person, you know, needing the long-term care, what assets they have, and what mechanisms are available for us with regard to protecting those assets. Because, you know, the name of the game here is, you know, long-term care, nursing home care in North Carolina, around $5,000 to $6,000 a month. That's a very expensive proposition. And there are, you know, certain laws in place that allow us to protect certain assets in that situation and if we need, you know, that level of care. So as we've talked about before, you know, the first threshold issue we have to deal with is whether there is a need, and the doctor makes that determination.
Right.
We've talked about that. That's the FL2 document, where the level of care is determined on that document. So once we're at that point, then we know that we're at the big question: how are we going to pay for this $5,000 to $6,000 per month? Different ways to pay for it, of course, will be private pay, which is you just pay out of your pocket.
Right.
If there's long-term care insurance in place, then obviously we're going to make application for that. As a side note, long-term care insurance usually, not always, but usually has specific limitations on it depending on, you know, what you purchased whenever you got the long-term care as it relates to how much is paid per month or what the total benefit is, how many years it pays, those type things. So we have to look at that as well. But also we have, you know, the Medicaid program, which, you know, is different when we're talking about adult care. We're talking about nursing home care as opposed to, you know, indigent type care.
Right, exactly. Medicaid also designed for those in extremely low incomes, right?
That's right. That's right. And but when we're talking about long-term care and nursing home care under the Medicaid program, we have our own set of rules and statutes that we deal with, which are, you know, very much different than any of the rules that we deal with as far as low-income individuals. So let's take a scenario. When we're talking about eligibility for long-term care and we're talking about a husband and a wife, the first thing that's important to note would be that, you know, Medicaid is going to count all the assets of both husband and wife.
Right.
So it doesn't really help as it relates to Medicaid to transfer assets, you know, back and forth.
Sure.
There is sometimes when we're talking about assisted living, which we can talk about on a different program, a benefit of transferring assets between spouses because they look at more of just the applicant's assets as opposed to husband and wife. But that's for a different program. So let's talk about Jane. All right.
Okay.
Now we're going to talk about the Jane is the person's name. She's the individual. Let's say her husband's passed away. We're just talking about the one person first.
Okay.
We'll talk about two husband and wife here in either later today or next week. All right. So let's say that Jane, you know, does have a house and let's say that the tax value of that house is $300,000. And by the way, tax value is all that Medicaid looks at.
Mm-hmm.
They could care less about fair market value. They don't have the time to go out and appraise your house.
Mm-hmm.
They just take the tax value. Let's say that that house has a mortgage on it of $100,000. Okay, so there's our real estate. We don't own any other real estate. It's just a house. We have $100,000 in savings, whether that's a CD or a 401k. It's liquid, or it could be made liquid pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that we have one vehicle, and let's say that we have $30,000 of personal property.
Right.
This could be, you know, the furniture in the house.
Jewelry.
It could be the jewelry. Yeah. It could be the china. It could be, you know, those kind of things. And let's say that Jane is receiving $1,500 a month in income.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's her deceased husband's Social Security. Maybe it's some retirement, but she's receiving that.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, Jane is in a situation where, you know, maybe she's had a stroke or she's fallen and gotten hurt or whatever the situation might be, and she's having to stay in a long-term care facility for a period of time. We've got to look at how to structure these assets in order to get her eligible or close to being eligible.
Mm-hmm.
In some situations, maybe we're getting very close to eligibility and save a lot of the assets. But in a lot of situations, we're really able to save all the assets under the law. So while we're at this point, I do want to identify just a catch-22.
Now, right.
Some people have heard of the intent to return home.
Mm-hmm.
And the intent to return home in North Carolina, if you go to Department of Social Services and you're making an application for Medicaid, they'll tell you about that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's a document that gets signed that says that it is my intent to return to my home place. Now, that takes the home right off of the radar screen completely. We don't, the home
completely
is,
or for now?
For now.
Okay.
Completely for now.
Okay.
There's two different issues here. We're talking about eligibility on one hand.
Right.
And then we're talking about subject to recovery on the other hand.
Yes. Okay.
So on the eligibility side of things, that makes the home place not countable.
Mm-hmm.
See, what we're wanting to do, Ben, is get all of the countable assets below this threshold of $2,000.
Right.
And the Medicaid rules are very specific as far as what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do, what's countable, what's not countable. So one of the provisions in our North Carolina Medicaid rules is that if you sign an intent to return home, even if you physically can't, even if there's no way you'll be able to get home,
right,
they can't count your home, okay,
right,
if you're an individual.
For eligibility.
For eligibility. But in the event you do receive Medicaid benefits, then upon your passing, then that home is going to be subject to estate recovery, which is, you know, potentially could get sold through a proceeding through the state of North Carolina, and that's the way the state gets paid back.
Mm-hmm. So
that's a catch there. I want listeners to pay attention to that because
it can be useful, but it also has a catch.
If there are people out there listening who have heard of this and say, oh, well, I remember doing that. And
right.
Mom or dad is receiving Medicaid. But Mr. Collins here on the radio is saying that that could be a problem later on. You need to put a gold star beside that, people, because, you know, that's an issue that you need to address with someone who understands these rules and can avoid that Medicaid lien estate recovery.
Now, say Jane has a house that kids and the family don't really care about having. I mean, they have their own and all of that, but they're thinking that while it may have some value, again, that she would like to pass on. Are there ways to preserve that in some fashion?
To preserve what exactly?
Either the home or the value of the home.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about that. Before we get to that, it's also important for the attorney to ask lots of questions, just not about the assets, but also about the family.
Right.
We need to know about that family dynamic. For example, let's say that Jane has a child who has been living with her for a period of time and taking care of her.
Taking care of her, yeah. Right.
To the point where this child is has been able to keep her from having to go into a care facility,
mm-hmm.
where there's a specific exception that is cut out in the Medicaid laws with regard to this caregiver child.
Mm-hmm.
If that caregiver child has lived in the home with Jane, the mother, and taken care of her for at least 2 years to the point where she hasn't had to go into a care facility, then the law allows that home to be conveyed to the caregiver child without any penalty at all.
Oh, no kidding.
And it removes it from estate recovery.
So you don't just kick somebody to the curb.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. We give this caregiver child a benefit here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the state is basically saying thank you for taking care of this person because we didn't have to do it. You did it. You get the house.
And that has to be the child's domicile, though. I mean, they have to have moved into it.
They have to live there, and you have to prove that. And basically, you do that by affidavits mm-hmm. of family members, affidavits of the caregiver child.
Yeah.
I would say...
receiving bills there.
That yeah. kind of thing. I would say that that's not that highly scrutinized,
mm-hmm.
as long as you have it documented fairly well.
Right.
I mean, obviously, in all of these Medicaid issues and everything that we touch as attorneys, of course, we're not going to take a position that is contrary, you know, to the truth.
Right.
But it's not. It's like they don't go in and
they could still have their own job and things like
sure.
that. But they're still taking care
absolutely.
Of mom and taking care of
absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, there's more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, here on the Talk Station as we go through that sticky wicket of Medicaid rules. And as we encourage you to make your call here too at 800-818-2255 or one of our local numbers if you have a question. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station. And Wes Collins with us here. So we're talking about Medicaid issues there, too. And so we've got Jane's scenario set up now with maybe a child and maybe that caregiver is going
right.
to have that carve out.
The point is, you know, the lawyer's got to ask the questions and understand right. that family dynamic. So, you know, if we have that caregiver child, then obviously the planning with regard to protecting the home
mm-hmm.
is going to be a relatively simple application of that caregiver child exception by
mm-hmm.
simply conveying the property over. Otherwise, a conveyance of that property would be a sanctionable transfer,
mm-hmm.
which means that if there's there's an application for Medicaid within 5 years, then that entire transaction is going to be sanctioned.
Right.
You divide the value of the home by $5,500, and that gives you the number of months
mm-hmm.
that there's no Medicaid eligibility. So mm-hmm. that's a gamble. You know, to do that. And as we talked about on the program before, got to be careful about just deeding the house, as we say. As
mm-hmm.
clients come in all the time, they say, well, can I just deed the house? Can
right.
I deed that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you deed the house or convey the house to the child and the house is in the child's name and then the child goes through a divorce,
mm-hmm.
well, that gets muddy.
Yeah.
If the child is in a business that goes out of business and has liability as a associated with that, that gets muddy.
Yeah, especially if you're still living in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
If your house is owned by your child and your child causes a car accident, gets sued.
Now
that
if,
gets muddy. So we got to be careful about those things.
If you own some other property,
yep.
some other remote property, I
right.
mean, it's a little less muddy, but it still could be muddy. But it also, it's still, you're taking a 5-year gamble.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's correct. So any property that is real property, real estate, that's titled in the applicant's name, whether
mm-hmm.
it be just the applicant or applicant and husband or wife, is going to be, you know, accountable asset subject to some of these exceptions that I'm talking about here. Now, under this scenario where Jane has a house and she has $100,000 of savings, she has a car and she has $30,000 of personal property, let's go ahead and get rid of the things we can get rid of quickly
mm-hmm.
under the law and take off of the radar screen.
And just say there's no caregiver exception here.
No caregiver exception right. under this one. Just wanted to bring that up so that listeners would understand that. The one car, don't have to do anything with regard to that because you can have one car. But in the event that Jane becomes eligible for Medicaid, we then at that point in time need to transfer that title only after, because that one car would be subject to estate recovery depending on the value of the car upon her death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so nothing to do right now we've got to note that and deal with it later once she becomes eligible.
But once she became eligible, that you'd be able to remove it and it wouldn't be subject to recovery?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. It's because it's a non-countable asset, you can transfer it, no problem.
Okay.
Medicaid would agree with that, no problem. The personal property, as far as any jewelry, furniture, you know, clothing, whatever it might be, non-countable. And the only thing I would say about that is that I've never seen the state of North Carolina seek a state recovery against personal property. Because the processes would be very difficult.
Yeah.
We're going to seize your jewelry and sell it, you know, it's difficult. But it's a non-countable asset on the front end for Medicaid.
They're not going to go in and auction off your precious moments collection.
No, no, not unless there's a
That'd be hard.
Very significant you know, item of personal property. So what are we focusing in on here? We're really focusing in on the house. And we're focusing in on the $100,000 of savings.
Right.
Now, we're at a point now where we know that Jane is going to need this care immediately. We know if we do not plan to protect these assets, then it's going to cost us $5,000 to $6,000 per month. Now, so we can look at Jane's scenario where she has $100,000 there, and that gets us a year and a half or so of care, and then there's nothing left at all.
Right.
So we've got to talk about, you know, what we do now and under the law that allows us to protect these assets.
Where does Social Security figure in? I mean,
great question.
Social income?
Yep. When we're talking about eligibility for Medicaid, we've got an income category and we've got an asset category. Medicaid could care less about income as it relates to eligibility. They're looking at assets only.
Okay, gotcha.
But if we've got Social Security, you know, pension, retirement money coming in, and we become eligible, and let's say under Jane's scenario, she's getting $1,500 a month.
Right.
Well, that's going to go into what's called the PML category, patient's monthly liability. So she will lose that $1,500 a month. It will offset what Medicaid will pay.
Well, I know I ran into that just because of somebody in our congregation. They were in a nursing facility, and basically their Social Security went to the facility.
Exactly. That's the PML.
Yeah.
Yep. Can't do much about that. That's just the way the law is.
That's how you pay rent.
That's how you pay. Right. So, all right. So we're down to the home, and we're down to a mortgage on the home of $100,000and $100,000 of savings. Okay. What we're going to want to do first is we're going to want to take care of that $100,000 savings by paying off the mortgage.
Right.
Medicaid will allow you to spend down your assets in a legal way by paying off your debts. I mean, obviously, this is a debt that she has.
And right.
If we don't pay that off, then where are we going to get the money to pay that mortgage?
You pay it all in one lump sum?
Yeah, just pay it off. And that gets rid of the $100,000. Okay. And Medicaid would give you the A-OK on that. No problem at all. Now, with regard to the home, that's what we're down to.
And now you've got a paid off home.
Now we've got a paid off home.
Right.
That's right. $300,000 asset. So we are, you know, $298,000 over that $2,000 threshold.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. I think we're stepping through this quite methodically. Hopefully, you're picking up some ideas. If you have some other questions, 800-818-2255. Our local numbers in Carteret, Craven, and Pamlico, 247-7282 and 353-4674 in Onslow. You can also go online at harvellandcollins.com to listen to past shows, and we'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And with Wes Collins, we're right at the crux of this now. We've paid off the mortgage, but there's a $300,000 asset against a $2,000 accountable.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, as we talked about before, we can't just at this point in time just convey that property over to a child. That would be a sanctionable transfer. But we can structure the home, and it's, you know, I can't go into all the details with regard to how this works. This is what you pay the attorney for, mm-hmm. to know how to do all this. And it's, it, you know, you can't really get into every single nitty gritty detail with regard to that. But the long and short of protecting the home under this scenario is you want to make the home a tenants in common asset. Okay.
Right.
Because the law is very clear that tenants in common property is a non-countable asset.
Mm-hmm.
So by conveying a small interest in the property into an irrevocable trust,
mm-hmm.
Which is a trust instrument that's specifically tailored by elder law attorney for the benefit of the children, and you make the children the trustee, then that's going to make the property not countable. And then the remaining interest in the property you're wanting to put into a separate trust document, mm-hmm. so as to make it a non-probate asset. Now, I know the majority of that just went probably right over the head of the listeners out there.
Yeah, what percentages are you talking about?
Well, it really doesn't matter. You're just wanting to transfer a very small percentage, maybe like a 0.01% or a 1%, something along lines, just a really smidgen of an interest.
Mm-hmm.
Into the irrevocable trust, and then a larger remaining interest in the rest of the trust. And then normally it would be advisable to retain a life estate,
mm-hmm.
As folks say, lifetime rights,
for
Jane under that scenario. Really, you're wanting to do that so that she does, in fact, have the right to continue to use the home as she sees fit, number one. And number two, you're wanting the children to get a step up in tax basis upon mm-hmm. her passing.
Right.
If you don't retain that life estate, then the basis transfers, and that could create an adverse tax consequence at a later date.
Right. The one, the smidgen, as you said, that was put in an irrevocable trust, would that be subject to a change of tax basis? Or?
Yeah, that would be, but it'd be such a small interest.
Part.
We're
right.
talking pennies,
okay.
I mean, or dollars.
Yeah.
We're not talking hundreds or thousands of dollars. So,
okay. Well, again, this just emphasizes the need for that planning. Now, does that need to be, that trust need to be set up before the application?
Absolutely. And as we started the program, you mentioned the Rush Limbaugh call where the individual mm-hmm. in Florida was upset about the mm-hmm. state coming after the assets. Well, you employ what I've just gone through mm-hmm. as far as structuring your assets under the law. These are all things that we show to the Department of Social Services. They approve them. Then there aren't those complaints because
right.
you don't have the problem. It's a matter of putting those round pegs in the round holes and the square pegs in the square holes under the Medicaid law
mm-hmm.
to protect the assets. Not for everyone
right.
here, Ben, not mm-hmm. for everyone, but under this scenario or scenarios in this range, absolutely available for folks to protect their assets.
Again, if you want to find out more, call Harvell & Collins at 252-726-9050.